blaming both sides.
You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent.
President sparks wide condemnation.
He's fanning the flames of a political debate.
Baltimore takes down Confederate monuments.
People have been driving by this morning, honking and cheering.
Good morning. I'm Steve Kathan. With the CBS World News Roundup, President Trump has again blamed both sides for last weekend's violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, putting white supremacists on the same level as those who opposed them, and triggering a torrent of criticism, plenty of it, from members of his own party. We're live with White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
Yesterday afternoon, aides expected Mr. Trump to talk about his plans to cut red tape for new highway projects and then get right back in the elevator. But instead, from the lobby of his Manhattan skyscraper, the president angrily held forth for a full quarter hour and let the world know what he really thinks about what happened last weekend.
I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
He reiterated his condemnation of white supremacists and neo-Nazis, but he also slammed what he dubbed the alt-left.
They came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs.
Despite the nationalist chants of blood and soil and Jews will not replace us by torch-carrying marchers last Friday night, the president said some who converged on Charlottesville were very fine people.
They were people protesting very quietly.
He expressed sympathy for those who want to keep Confederate symbols in the public square.
I wonder, is it George Washington next week, and is it Thomas Jefferson the week after?
In guidance provided to the president's defenders on Capitol Hill, the White House urges them to stress that the president was entirely correct, that both sides in Charlottesville acted inappropriately and bear some responsibility.
This is Pam Coulter. The response to the president's controversial comments was swift, even from members of his own party. Speaker Paul Ryan tweeted, "White supremacy is repulsive. There can be no moral ambiguity." From Jeb Bush, "He must leave no room for doubt that racism and hatred will not be tolerated or ignored by his White House." And 2012 GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney tweeted, "No, not the same. One side is racist, bigoted Nazi. The other opposes racism and bigotry."
We're with John Dickerson now, CBS News chief Washington correspondent. John, Charlottesville was a battle between white supremacists and those who opposed them. The president, in blaming both sides, seemed to portray this as a fight between the right and the left.
That's right. And that was the central problem that people had with the president's remarks, is that they lacked proportion. That while he said racism is bad, he seemed at pains to wrestle to the ground this idea that some on the left had participated and may have even obscured the larger, more important message that the neo-Nazis and white supremacists were marching in support of ideas that are directly against the principles of the United States and the country he leads.
So where does this leave the president? He's getting praise from David Duke, but savage criticism from most members of his own party.
I don't know how a Republican gets back on the right side with the president here. The normal excuses are hard. You can't say, well, this was just a slip of the tongue. It's now been a 3-day set of remarks from the president. It's a foundational issue. In other words, Nazis are bad, and that's a pretty simple truth that everyone knows, and it shouldn't be this confusing. On the Democratic side, where you'll need for some of the things the president wants, you'll need support from Democrats. How does a Democrat sign on to the president's agenda when it comes to something like infrastructure when he has caused this kind of damage, which members in the Democratic grassroots are not going to forget?
John Dickerson, thanks. The head of the AFL-CIO has joined four other executives quitting the president's business council over his Charlottesville comments. The CEO at Walmart criticized Mr. Trump in a letter to employees. The battle in Charlottesville had the controversy over a Confederate monument as its backdrop. CBS's Juliana Goldman's in Baltimore, where overnight some monuments were taken down.
This move overnight came after Baltimore City Council passed a resolution on Monday to strike down the four Confederate statues across the city. A number of people gathered here last night as the Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson statue that was behind me was lifted off its base. And in Alabama, the city of Birmingham worked to board up the Confederate sailors and soldiers monument after the mayor mayor ordered the monument to be covered earlier in the day. State law protects its removal. Then you have North Carolina, where the state's governor said yesterday he wants to bring down Confederate monuments from around the state.
Police in Durham, North Carolina, arrested a woman in connection with the monument that was hauled down by protesters on Monday night. Someone used spray paint to deface a column on the Lincoln Memorial in Washington. Police are investigating. A new analysis paints a dire picture for Obamacare customers if President Trump carries out a threat to stop federal payments to insurers. We're live with CBS's Vicki Barker.
The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office calculates that premiums for a popular individual health care plan would jump, and more people would be left with no insurance options at all if Mr. Trump follows through on his threat, and that nearly $200 billion would be added to the federal deficit over the next 10 years. That's because a different Obamacare subsidy would automatically increase as premiums jump, more than wiping out any savings. Steve?
The man President Trump endorsed for Jeff Sessions' former Senate seat in Alabama has advanced to a Republican primary runoff.
He knows that I'm the person in this race who's going to help him make this country great again.
Luther Strange will face Roy Moore, the state's former chief justice. The winner takes on Democrat Doug Jones in a December election. On Twitter, President Trump praised North Korea's Kim Jong-un for backing down on a Guam attack. He says the alternative would have been catastrophic and unacceptable. 40 years ago today, Elvis Presley died.
Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
And now a lot of Elvis fans say the people at Graceland are cruel for charging to file past his grave for the first time, just under $30. Cheryl Scogin from Los Angeles was third in line for last night's Graceland vigil.
I don't like it. Elvis wouldn't like it if he knew that the fans were charged to go up there and see. It's not personal anymore. It's too commercial.
The cost of admittance does allow people inside the estate's entertainment complex. A new study sizes up the best and worst states in which to grow old.
Caring.com's Tim Sullivan says the study used 13 categories, such as health care and quality of life, to rank all 50 states. The best:
Utah, Iowa, South Carolina, Washington, and Nebraska.
And the worst?
At the bottom of the list was West Virginia. While their care wasn't that expensive, they did come in at the bottom in terms of quality.
Also at the bottom of the list, Wyoming, North Dakota, New York, and Indiana. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
A 71-year-old actor John Hurd died last month in California. Now a coroner says he had a heart attack. His death was not linked to back surgery he had undergone days before. Actor Daniel Craig has confirmed rampant speculation he will return one last time, he says, to play James Bond. He's got four 007 movies to his credit already. That's the roundup. I'm Steve Kathan, CBS News.